Live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for September 23rd in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is our two of two. And we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth, ladies and gentlemen. Last hour, we talked to Brian Rust, RustCoinAndGift.com, RustGoldAndSilver.com, about the Honest Money Report, where gold and silver was sitting and a whole lot more. We also talked about this incredible article in WND.com, WorldNet Daily, where Joseph Farah basically is saying, hey, the J6 rally went really well. It began with prayer, the Pledge of Allegiance, the National Anthem. They thanked the police. What a contrast to the mayhem of the left. And that's great news. And anyway, Joseph Farah is saying, hey, we ought to go ahead and sit at the Capitol and do a Washington, D.C. kind of sit-in for the next year till the next election. Peaceful as all get out, and it'll be tremendous. This was a dress rehearsal for that. All I know is, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a right to protest. We have a right to peacefully assemble. And I personally understand what Joseph Farah is saying, and I wish it could be peaceful, but bad actors seem to destroy the apples sometimes. And we need to be really careful about that. I propose indoor rallies where people have a ticket to attend. They sign up ahead of time or at the door. They can pay a little fee to cover some of the costs. And that way it's a whole lot safer to make sure we truly have peacefully or that we're truly peacefully assembling. Anyway, just my two cents on the matter, ladies and gentlemen, to kind of wrap up and reiterate the last hour. If you want to listen to the last hour, please do. It'll be up after the broadcast today. But I really wanted to demonstrate, at least in this hour, the understanding of we follow the Prince of Peace, ladies and gentlemen. We want to be peaceful. We don't need an insurrection. We don't need a revolution. We need a restoration. We just need to return to what made America great in the first place, right? Good, honest Americans obeying the supreme law of the land, using the checks and balances. That's where it's at, baby. Anyway, I wanted to make sure that it was clear in this hour, too, of what we're saying and what we're not saying. All right, on to other topics. Pete Sepp, National Taxpayers Union President, on your radio, the voice of American taxpayers. Welcome back, sir.
Great to be here.
Man, we've got so much to cover. Not enough time to cover it, but, man, we're sure going to try. So while everybody else is kind of tied up with, you know, coronavirus stuff or economic, you know, whatever, no jobs or too many jobs or, well, there's, you know, nobody, there's a big unemployment number, but yet all the jobs are full and price wages are going up. And let's start there about wages. I don't know how caught up the American people are on this, Pete, but wages in the last year or 6 months maybe have literally gone up substantially, sir. It's shocking.
Yeah, that's actually good news for a lot of Americans who want to see this economy finally recover and stabilize. That, I think, is an important point, Sam, in the sense that we have seen tremendous economic growth since the trough of the pandemic, maybe middle of last year. But, of course, can it hold? And when you're in a trough and you crawl out, well, of course, everything looks a lot sunnier. That doesn't necessarily mean you are back to the point you were before you hit the trough. And so federal, state, and local government policies can either help make that economy more stable and the recovery more stable, or it can hurt things really badly. And in the hurt category, we have most of what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, and that's why we all have to be on guard for all of the terrible proposals that are being debated in the House of Representatives right now and are soon to be debated in the United States Senate, starting with $3.5 trillion of new federal spending with a whole lot of taxes to back it up.
And I agree with you that it's great news that wages are going up because it's sorely needed. The sad part about it is prices are going up as well right now. How do we work on separating that to make sure that, you know what, wages are going up, but prices or inflation doesn't get us? The Fed seems to be kind of I don't know what you want to say, but asleep at the wheel on this a little bit. And I'm not really suggesting the Fed do a lot. I'm not a fan of the Fed, as you well know. At the same time, though, hey, we teach to the ideal and we live in the real a little bit, Pete, right?
Yes, yes. And I think it's important for most folks to realize that the after inflation, after tax return on your income is the real figure to look at. And those are two factors to unravel here. Not only are rising prices a problem, even if your wages are going up, but rising taxes can be a problem. How much do you have left when you account for the fact that you're paying more at the grocery store or the gas pump? And how much do you have left after you filed your 1040 tax return or paid your property tax bill or done your business tax return if you happen to be self-employed? Those are really important things to keep an eye on. And unfortunately, the trend is that both inflation and taxes appear to be headed up right now. And we have to do our best to make sure that doesn't happen, so these wage gains are real, genuine gains.
So here's the problem. They say this, here comes the Biden tax bill, Wall Street Journal. What does that all mean?
Well, what it means is definitely not what the mainstream media is saying, that, well, these tax increases will only affect the rich, people making more than $400,000 a year. I mean, let's set aside just for a moment sort of the constitutional problem we have with a government singling out any group of people for discriminatory tax treatment. I mean, I happen to think that we should all be treated the same. We can certainly make provisions in the law to keep taxes from hitting the poorest among us. You know, people ought to be allowed to provide for themselves and for their church before they provide for government. But beyond that, is it right, for example, to impose a tax rate and burden on a dollar-for-dollar basis that's twice as heavy, five times as heavy, 10 times as heavy for certain members of our society than for others? That doesn't seem constitutional. Nonetheless, that's what Washington is doing right now. And our challenge is to say, well, wait a minute, we not only have a problem with that, but there's an even bigger problem here, and it's very simple. The middle class will pay for these tax hikes one way or another, and the government's own revenue estimates show us this. That's the most interesting part. You look at the Joint Committee on Taxation's estimates of revenues that would be raised by increasing the corporate tax rate, for example, from 21 to 26, 27, 28%. And lo and behold, at the 28% mark, there's an estimate that came out recently, and it said, okay, this will likely raise over 10 years. $100 billion of that will be borne by people with less than six-figure incomes. How is that possible? It's because big corporate tax rate increases slow down wage growth. They slow down hiring. They raise prices that are passed along to consumers. So again, it's not just big, wealthy businesses that pay for this when taxes are raised on them. It's all of us, middle class.
Pete, they used to mock the trickle-down discussion, but the truth is it does trickle down. Or you could say it doesn't trickle down. Wage increases don't trickle down. Things don't happen that could happen because at the top they have other obligations and money goes different places. Now, I agree there's a lot of ways to solve a lot of these problems, but the fact is they're real. And mocking the trickle-down discussion or debating how it all works isn't very helpful. Acknowledging some of the truth on this, that look, it's going to come from somewhere. Okay, the money's going to come from somewhere. And if a rich person has to pay something else, they're just going to let Peter rob Paul. So Peter's the tax, robbing Paul, the consumer. And the rich realize that. And they just say, well, if you force me to direct my income there, then so be it, you know, and et cetera. Now, wages are finally going up, and that's great news. But Here comes the Biden tax bill, says the Wall Street Journal. And here's the next headline from the Washington Examiner. Biden's tax hikes are unpopular, and Congress knows it. Are they going to back off in this time of COVID, in this time when the economy's sputtering and we're trying to get it back a rolling? Or are they going to double down and abuse us all? What do you think is going to happen? Are the Republicans going to hold the line in the Senate? What's really going to be the telltale, do you think, Pete?
Well, I think we're already starting to see those signs. For example, we did some polling in several key congressional districts around the country on a variety of fiscal issues. We asked them, for example, how do you feel about the $3.5 trillion 10-year budget plan that President Biden and his allies in Congress have proposed? And this was right before the House of Representatives began filling in the details of this bill. And in these districts, by 60-65% margins, people were disapproving of it. We asked them, are they worried about Congress turning toward energy taxes to try and pay for this massive $3.5 trillion spending bill? There again, people were very worried about it, and they were already connecting the dots. They were saying by 60-70% margin, this will raise prices at the pump.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a very complicated economic discussion. That's what the mainstream wants you to believe. I think it's a very simple economic discussion. I'll explain how. We also want to talk about the debt ceiling and a whole lot more with Pete Sepp, president of the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Biden's tax hikes are unpopular, ladies and gentlemen, and Congress knows it. Now, as far as I understand, Joe Biden is starting to get a lot of Democrats, I don't know how to say this, that are going against his agenda. And I find this really, really interesting. The headline says this: President Joe Biden is meeting with, quote, feuding factions of his party in an attempt to save the bulk of his domestic agenda from legislative implosion. The items at stake are the Democrats sweeping $3.5 trillion. Anyway, it goes on about the safety net, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, and so on. Anyway, the bottom line is people are freaking out about the size and scope of the spending package. Pete, that's right where you were speaking about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Our poll results certainly show that. They are scared of inflation by an 82 to 17% margin. People said they are worried about the impacts of inflation. Take a look at some of the other questions we asked. I'd just like to point this out because it's really important. We asked, do you agree or disagree that increasing energy taxes, like raising taxes on natural gas and oil, could affect energy costs for consumers and businesses and risk increasing inflation further? Well, obviously, if they're already concerned about inflation, they're probably going to make this connection that, yeah, this is a real problem. Here you go. 72% agreed with that statement that raising energy taxes will affect energy costs and risk increasing inflation. Only 20% disagreed. And of course, in addition to raising those taxes, you're also discouraging production of energy here in the United States. And that's obviously a national security and foreign policy question, too. Do we want to become dependent on foreign sources of energy again after so much progress? This is just a microcosm of one tax policy that people are very worried about. They're way worried about others. And maybe we have reached a turning point in this country where voters of very modest means, very modest incomes are saying, you know, I don't believe politicians when they say they're going to tax the other guy to give me benefits. Somehow, it always comes back to me in both ways. Yeah, I may get a bigger benefit check from the federal government, but my prices are going to go up, or my tax rates are somehow going to be affected. It's going to be passed along to me, and I'm not buying it anymore. I'm hoping more and more American people are wising up to this, and I think they are.
But even members of the Democratic Party, believe it or not, are miles apart on some of this. You've got the extreme Bidens and the Kamala Harrises and some of those, but then you've got a lot of moderates and a lot of, what are they called, yellow dog Republicans that are concerned about budgetary realities like the rest of us are and everything else. So these people are miles apart, Pete.
Yes, they certainly are. In fact, you have Stephanie Murphy of Florida, Democrat. She calls herself a member of the Democratic Blue Dog Coalition. And,
oh, it's Blue Dog, not Yellow Dog. Sorry.
Yeah, Blue Dog. But she is a very principled and pragmatic member of Congress, member of the Democratic Party, saying she can't vote for the $3.5 trillion package with all of its tax hikes the way it was proposed. When we were witnessing a vote as a committee was marking up their part of this legislation on a 95% excise tax on prescription drug manufacturers, it was a proposal to impose that tax, or they had the option, the manufacturers, of agreeing to negotiate prices directly with the federal government. I mean, that's effectively like pointing a weapon at somebody and saying, do what I say or negotiate with me. not much of a choice there.
But negotiate as I tell you to also.
That's right. That's right. And three Democrats on that committee objected to it and said, we're not going to vote for it. And the proposal died in committee. So,
and this is where we've got to start, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, you see the division here. I'm not really into division, but I am into saying, look, this is our opportunity to make the rest of it die. Let me give you an example to kind of highlight the point. They got a sweeping $3.5 trillion, what they call a social safety net. And then the bipartisan infrastructure bill. I get some of the infrastructure stuff because we do need to take care of some things in America. I'm not even really for federal roads, but we've got them, so we live in the real, right? We've got to take care of some of those infrastructure things. I get it. But this huge safety net, why would we be looking at raising taxes but yet bailing out a safety net? What if we just don't raise taxes? In fact, we lower taxes. Maybe we won't need to bail out such a big safety net there, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah. It follows, doesn't it? Leave more money in people's pockets and they can afford to take care of themselves. And again, We're not just talking about rich people here. Raise their taxes. And as you say, Sam, there is a trickle-down effect. And the trickle-down means nothing trickles down anymore. And people are no longer necessarily in as good a financial shape as they would have been if they'd never contemplated raising taxes in Washington in the first place.
Now, didn't Biden say he wouldn't raise our taxes?
That he did. He said that only those households and businesses making more than $400,000 a year would be impacted. And that is manifestly untrue. The Joint Committee on Taxation in Congress, and remember, this is a nonpartisan agency of Congress, and Democrats are in control of Congress right now. This isn't some shadow Republican outfit saying it. They are saying at least 20% of all the corporate tax hike will be borne by folks making less than $100,000 a year. There's also a big tax increase on vaping products in the proposal being considered in Congress right now. That's going to affect many households making under $400,000 a year. And at the same time, the folks who are using those products to quit smoking are going to be penalized for doing it. That makes no sense. If Congress turns to energy taxes, that's going to be a direct hit on the middle class and their pocketbooks, because everything runs on energy, everything, and the cost will go up.
The bottom line is, ladies and gentlemen, they want you to believe it's kind of like perpetual motion when it comes to power, Pete. You know, a lot of people say, yeah, we can create perpetual motion. The problem is nobody's done it, right? Because it defies reality. If you take something from somewhere, it's got to come out of something else. Okay, there's not just this infinite import of energy or money or something. It comes from somewhere, okay? And you can't rob Peter to pay Paul. It comes out of something. It just does. And it doesn't matter if it's money or energy or whatever it is. And so my point is that, you know what? We got to realize, no matter how Biden pitches it, whether he lies and says he won't raise taxes and now it turns out that his plan will, it's a very simple process. This is not an economic, you got to have a degree discussion. You just got to know this. If they're going to spend more money, they got to bring in more money. If they got to bring in more money, it's got to come from somewhere. I mean, isn't that as kitchen table as it gets, Pete?
Yeah, it is. And there are those who say, well, we could borrow the money. Well, borrowing is nothing but deferred taxes on somebody else. We can say...
Hold on, that was so brilliant. I want you to say that again, sir.
Borrowing is nothing but deferred taxes on somebody else. It means that if we're going to borrow a dollar now, we or somebody else is going to have to pay it back later. And that's precisely the problem with our $28-plus trillion national debt. You know, it was Barack Obama who said, not raising the debt ceiling is irresponsible. It's like walking into a restaurant, getting the bill, and leaving before paying it. Well, raising the debt ceiling is no better. That's like getting the bill, handing it to a kid in the high chair at the table next to you and saying, you take care of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is that simple. Don't let people believe or, you know, let people deceive you into thinking, oh, you've got to let somebody else who knows more about economics, deal with these issues. Your simple knowledge about how to run your family or your business is plenty. Okay, whether it's on a small scale of a single individual, a large family, a small business, a larger business, the principles are the same. You cannot get money from nowhere. Okay, you cannot get funding from nowhere. Government creates nothing in terms of wealth. So whatever government takes from us, in order for them to give it back to us, there's a heavy overhead in the middle. That's government. We got to understand that the only way we're going to do better is if we spend less. When we get back, we'll talk about that with Pete Sepp and the debt ceiling, what's going to happen and more. Pete Sepp, National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, Liberty Roundtable Live.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Senators held a closed-door briefing Wednesday with three DOD officials about the Afghanistan debacle. Republican Senator Joni Ernst with the Senate Armed Services Committee tells Fox News DOD officials were playing games with the senators.
We had a closed-door briefing from three DOD officials, one of them being the DOD policy chief, civilian Colin Call. He was very, very dismissive of our senators and their questions. He gave immature responses and very simple things. A number of them surrounding the Afghan nationals that were evacuated, the numbers of those evacuees, and the security questions and concerns surrounding those evacuees. He could not answer those questions. He could not respond to any questions we asked about the threat assessments on the ground in Afghanistan.
USA Radio News.
You take steps to stay healthy when at the pharmacy picking up vitamins or filling a prescription.
May I help you?
Take another healthy step right now and ask the pharmacist how Prevnar 13 can help protect you from pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease. If you're 65 or older, a trip to the pharmacy is a lot more pleasant than a trip to the hospital because of pneumococcal pneumonia. Help protect yourself with the Prevnar 13 pneumococcal 13 valent conjugate vaccine, diphtheria CRM 197 protein. Prevnar 13 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 13 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 13 does not protect against all strains of the disease. Stop by the pharmacy today and ask about Prevnar 13. Learn more at Prevnar13.com. Don't get Prevnar 13 if you have had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with a weakened immune system may have a lower response to the vaccine. The most commonly reported side effect was pain at the injection site. For additional common side effects and full prescribing information, please call 1-866-694-9300 or visit Prevnar13.com.
As the border crisis continues at the U.S.-Mexico border, thousands upon thousands of Haitians illegally entered the United States and were kept at bay by severely outnumbered Border Patrol agents. Keeping in mind this confrontation would not have happened if the border wall was completed. Tim Berg from the Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau has more.
The Biden administration is investigating whether reins being held by Border Patrol on horseback were used to whip Haitian illegal immigrants trying to get into the United States. President of the National Border Patrol Council, Brandon Judd, tells Fox News he's confident agents weren't misusing the reins, which he says are for keeping people away from danger when getting too close to the horses.
None of our agents strike people with those reins. It doesn't happen, and it didn't happen in this case, which is why I welcome this investigation. These agents will be exonerated.
Thanks for listening. We are USA Radio News.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's Pete Sapp, president of National Taxpayers Union, on your radio. So, Pete, we're kind of backing into taxes and the debt ceiling and talking about a lot of, in a way, very complicated stuff. But I submit to you, it's not that complicated, folks. It's very simple. No matter where you tax, the money comes out of somewhere. And if you tax the rich, they're just going to divert some of their money to those taxes and not to you or me or anybody else who might work for those people, etc. If you tax the rich, then they're not going to fund other projects they might normally fund. If they're going to do a charitable event or something that would benefit society, hey, if the taxes take the money, they're just going to say, I guess I can't do that other stuff now. And money comes from somewhere. And government never produces any wealth at all. That's a fundamental thing to understand, Pete.
Yes, that's exactly right. Government can certainly enact policies that get out of the way of wealth creation and production, or perhaps even encourage it in the private sector. But the public sector does not in and of itself generate a net wealth benefit. It depends upon it. And again, per your mention of infrastructure earlier, government can help to provide the conditions to allow for a growing economy, but government doesn't do it on its own. Unless, of course, you get into dangerous policies like just printing more money. And that's certainly not what we want to see here in the United States. Other countries and other regimes throughout history have tried that, and it hasn't worked.
Printing more money, ladies and gentlemen, just creates the hidden tax called inflation. That's all that it does in the long term, ladies and gentlemen. Short term, you might feel a little bit of sugar high. But in the reality, it will take its toll, and on the back end, the unseen tax is inflation, where people don't really know. The Biden plan will raise taxes on the middle class, ladies and gentlemen. Make no mistake about it. Now, Pete, let me make sure I have your quote right. Here's the quote from Pete Sepp. Borrowing is nothing but deferred taxes on somebody else.
Exactly.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. And I really want that to sink home. And I know I've repeated it several times, but there's a reason, because it is that simple. When you borrow money, you're just putting the burden on your children and your grandchildren. Someday it will have to be dealt with. And that's why I want to talk more about the debt ceiling, Pete Sepp, because I submit to you that the debt ceiling is a farce. Now, it was put in place in 1917, ladies and gentlemen, and it was designed to help slow down government spending. But, ladies and gentlemen, if they just spend, and hit the debt ceiling, and spend, and hit the debt ceiling, and spend, and hit the debt ceiling, then they either raise the debt ceiling or suspend the debt ceiling. It's a farce, Pete.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, of course, we hear a lot from Treasury secretaries. They say this, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, that it would be irresponsible to not approve an increase in the debt ceiling. If you're holding out against an increase in the debt ceiling, you're risking the collapse of the United States economy and the confidence of investors in wanting to buy up our debt. Well, I don't disagree with that. The problem here, of course, is it's also irresponsible for members of Congress to have ever approved that much spending in the first place that's leading to the debt. Why do we keep doing that? Investor confidence in the United States is going to keep dropping if we don't do something to get federal spending and taxes under control. Investors appreciate stability, and while they might react to members of Congress stalling on approving the debt ceiling, they're also taking a look at the long-term horizon, and they're seeing this Congress, this government, like past governments, have not been serious about getting federal spending under control.
But I do have this question, Pete. It seems to me that if we chopped off a lot of the foreign aid that we're giving out to countries left and right, if we were to find a few simple every department go through and truly identify waste and be accountable for their budgets in a meaningful way, and then we were to reduce the foreign aid and foreign expenditures, I believe we could probably prevent the debt ceiling from having to be increased.
If we made a concerted effort to say, no more of this, we're going to pay our own way through life of the federal government without having to depend on future generations picking up the tab, if we approach the topic with enough serious forethought, yes, we could do that.
And I bring that up, ladies and gentlemen, because I believe that's the hope, right? We're not just going to say, hey, we're just going to pile it on and get rid of the debt ceiling, and one generation will just eventually melt right on down. The hope is that we can, in our generation, take responsibility, be truly responsible, not raise the debt ceiling, reduce foreign aid, reduce waste in federal spending, reduce programs that don't make sense, tighten our belt a little bit. And I think Rand Paul had one of the greatest ways to do that. Here's what he said. I think we need a penny plan. And what we're going to do is we're going to reduce our expenditures by one penny out of every dollar. And that's all we're going to do for now. And then we're going to eventually do another penny. But not now. We're just going to do a penny for now. And that's fundamentally where responsibility starts, Pete.
Yes, it absolutely is. And for those who say, well, that's just Rand Paul talking. No, there are other members of Congress who support that concept. And I'll tell you about one. And I won't reveal their name yet. This is a member of Congress who's sponsoring legislation called the Audit the Pentagon Act. And this legislation would say, very simply, to agencies within the Department of Defense, you know, the Navy Department or the Missile Defense Agency, all the whole gaggle of them who are under the umbrella of the Pentagon, look, you have three more years, I believe it's 3 years, I might be mistaken, but you have a certain period of time in order to pass a clean financial audit, meaning that you have to know where the money came from, where it's going, you have to know your inventories, all of the basic accounting details that any private business in the United States has to know. You've got to do this within a certain period of time, obtain that clean financial audit, or your budget is going to be cut by a penny on every dollar, 1%. The sponsor of that legislation is none other than Senator Bernie Sanders. So, no, what Rand Paul is proposing is not quite the same, but there is some agreement on the concept that we've got to start doing things differently in government. And I don't expect Bernie Sanders to support a penny plan across the board, but what I'm saying is there's enough ideas out there among lawmakers that we can say, all right, we're going to take you at your word and pursue each one of these ideas. You may not agree on all of them, but if we put them all together, we can make some real progress.
No matter what, ladies and gentlemen, what we need to do is balance the budget. We don't need an amendment to the Constitution or something to balance the budget. They'll just violate that. We don't need another debt ceiling. They'll just go ahead and suspend and or raise the ceiling. Okay, what we've got to do is take direct action, whether you like Rand Paul's penny plan or whether you like the other plan that Pete Sepp mentioned or not. I'm not here to debate the best way to do it. I'm here to basically say these options are on the table. And what it's really going to take is the American people to start rallying behind some of these options to really give them traction. It's one thing for a Rand Paul to stand in the Congress chambers and tell you about it and then get voted down. It's another thing for enough Americans to back Rand Paul to get it traction enough to where the media can't ignore it and Congress can't ignore it. And that's really what we're looking for, and the National Taxpayers Union and other organizations can really make that a reality, Pete.
Yes, they absolutely can. And, you know, once again, the American people have taken the lead on this already. We can ask every person in America today this simple question. During the last year, during the pandemic, which has gone on more than a year now, how much did you cut your household budget by? My guess is most people would say a lot more than 1%. We had to make ends meet during very difficult times. I don't believe there were many households in America who said, oh, yeah, we actually got even richer. I'm thinking most people had to stretch a bit. When we can ask the American people that question and they answer 5%, 10%, even more, then we ask them the second question. Well, why can't Congress and the White House agree on cutting just 1% from Washington's budget? If we ask those two questions and get the answers, I think we are going to get those answers on. Most people are going to say, yeah, the penny plan is a smart idea, and it's time we actually did it instead of just talking about it.
And there are also the naysayers that would say, you know, a penny's not enough, Sam. We got to get this done. We got to take a serious knife to this. And Rand Paul's right, though. You know what? I appreciate that we need to cut the government by 50, 75% or whatever number you want to use. But we teach to the ideal and we live in the real. When we come back, I want Pete to respond to that, because the way they've taken away our liberties, the way they've spended us into oblivion is by, well, they didn't do it all at once. It was a little bit by a little bit by a little incremental reality check. That's the way back as well. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live with Pete Sepp. NTU.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
All right, Pete Sepp, National Taxpayers Union. He's the president thereof, NTU.org, doing a phenomenal job. They're pulling their research, their proposals, their partnerships all across the country at all levels, by the way. If you want to start a local tax-affecting chapter in your area, get a hold of NTU.org. They'll help. They'll give you guidance. They'll even partner with some dollars and cents if the appropriate organizations are set up, etc. Biden plan will raise taxes on the middle class, ladies and gentlemen. Make no mistake about that reality check. And Pete Sepp, quote, borrowing is nothing but deferred taxes on somebody else. Quote, from myself, the debt ceiling is a farce. Senator Rand Paul introduces penny plan, balanced budget discussions, if you will. But Pete Sepp asked an incredible question before the break that I want to reiterate. And then I want to ask a follow-up question to Pete's. Here it is. How much did you reduce spending over the last year? Can we force government to do the same? Is my question. Can we force government to do the same? And I'm going to even borrow a phrase from Barack Obama, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, we can. What do you say to that, Pete?
We absolutely can. And yes, to your point that there are lots of folks out there who are saying, but a penny on each dollar is just not enough. Well, I don't disagree with that. Unfortunately, if we don't start somewhere, we won't get anywhere. That's the point. We've got to start someplace. And Rand Paul, as you point out, certainly would like to see federal spending reduced by more than 1%. But he's introducing legislation because that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where we have to make practical progress toward the goal we all seek. You got to get on that road first. You've got to accelerate the automobile slowly at first until you're rolling down the road at a steady pace and you can pick up that pace. Once people realize that they can do 1% easily, we then say, all right, well, let's try for 3%. Let's try for 5%. And we'll find out along the way that the automobile of our economy, of the federal government, is not going to crash on the side of the road by taking it a little easier.
So the question becomes, how much is the United States budget, if we were to not borrow a penny or whatever else, how much is the United States budget right now?
It's an interesting question because do we include all of this pandemic aid that's been recently voted on? I mean, if right now federal outlays are running above $5 trillion a year. In normal years before the pandemic, it was more like $3.5, $4 trillion.
All right. So do you know what 1% of $5 trillion is, ladies and gentlemen? It's $50 billion. That's all it is. And I think about that and I think, can't we do that? Why are we having a hard time getting that done? Bipartisan, shut Rand Paul down. Now, there's a lot of people that agree with him, but obviously not enough, right? But why can't we do that? Only $50 billion? You would think you could do that. I mean, they literally throw $50 billion here and there everywhere all the time. Can't we do $50
billion? Yes. And to your point, Sam, okay, I'm not trying to pick on the Pentagon here. I know we were talking about defense spending earlier, but while the debate was going on over the trillion-dollar infrastructure package, a group of senators, Democrats and Republicans, said, hey, we want to amend this package with a $50 billion increase in defense spending. And we managed to shoot down that amendment, saying it's not relevant to this infrastructure package. And anyway, the Pentagon's already getting about $750 billion a year. So that was a single vote to try and spend $50 billion. That's what we're talking about here. These votes to increase spending by that much money occur all the time. It's not a big deal to find $50 billion going the other way.
And that's why I say, if you look at foreign aid, if you look at the Pentagon, if you look at wasteful programs, if you say, listen, I need everybody across your budgets to turn in, 1% less, you're going to have to find them. It wouldn't impact anybody if you did it across the whole $5 trillion budgetary reality that we face right now. I'm telling you right now, nobody would even notice. Pete?
Yeah.
They really wouldn't.
That's right. That's right. And it's not to say that the federal government is totally useless, that doesn't do anything valuable. Of course, there are functions that we deem very important. And we debate over how many of those functions should be maintained and how big they should be and how much should they do. Fine, but that doesn't mean at 100% or 105% or 110% is where we should be taking government right now. It should be 99%, 98, 95, getting 95% of what you ask for every year for 10 years would, to most folks, be a very satisfactory situation. It's something you could plan on. It's something that you could adjust to. We don't do that in government enough.
There is hope, because I believe I've been at this 25 years. As you know, we celebrated our 25th year celebration of Liberty Roundtable Live on the air. I was on the radio before that, so I've been in the radio business and in the media for about 30 years, but 25 years doing Liberty Roundtable Live, most of it syndicated as well. I get that we need to do a little bit at a time. I get that we can't get it all done at once. I get that we got to work towards it a little bit at a time. But I have seen, Pete Sepp, in the last probably 3 years, more people waking up to the reality of our situation than I did in the first 22. I kid you not, Americans are starting to get it. People who used to just roll their eyes at me now come up and talk about these things and bring up these things and express their concerns and articulate, hey, something's wrong. We got to do this or that. And a lot of the opposition, I mean, I used to be considered radical. Now I'm considered pretty mainstream. Not because I've changed. Not because I've changed, Pete. I haven't changed a bit. You've been on the radio with me 25 years. You know, I'm saying the same things I've always said, right?
That's right.
But because people are realizing the truth now like never before. Is that what you're seeing too?
Yeah, definitely. So they're finally saying to themselves, well, wait a minute. If Congress's approval rating is so low, and I'm among the people answering those polls, I'm not having confidence in the leadership in Washington, D.C. on basic issues. Well, that's one and the same. If I'm expressing that lack of confidence, and I feel that I know why I'm expressing that lack of confidence, then, you know, maybe the American people are a little smarter about these fiscal policy issues than the political class give us credit for. Maybe, just maybe, our input, our everyday experiences, all of our professional knowledge in the things we do every day could actually be put into practice in Washington and make things better. We're realizing that accountants, doctors, lawyers, auto mechanics, people with everyday experiences in the modern private sector can bring that expertise to government and improve it.
And just maybe, ladies and gentlemen, for your consideration, right, we the people might need to flex our muscles a little peacefully here. But you know what? Start to insist, hey, you're going to cut the budget or we're going to find somebody who will. You're going to go ahead and put a halt on this spending. So will they flat out raise the debt ceiling? They will, huh?
My Yeah, that's my bet. That's my bet. I do think, though, that this is another teachable moment for Congress if the American people insist upon it. We can win certain reforms right now in exchange for that vote that they're likely going to cast. And that's what we need to focus on. And we need to do that at the local level, too, as I was just talking about. This pool of talent that's among all Americans can be applied to local budgetary solutions, too. Do you work in a computer store? Well, demand to see what your local government is spending on computers and say, wait a minute, do you really need this equipment? If you're an auto mechanic and you say, I want to see the budget of what my local government is spending on school buses, and you say, what in the world are you doing paying this much for the maintenance of these things? I know how much it costs. Every American from every walk of life has knowledge that can be applied toward making government more efficient and working better.
And has influence beyond their vote, as you wisely say. We can take peaceful action. We can hold them accountable. First, it's to bring it to the attention of we the people. Secondly, it's then to assert that, hey, we can do it better, faster, cheaper, smarter, more efficiently, or not at all, depending on the situation. That's our role in it. Voting is great, and we should do that, but there's a lot more. And it's activism. Some say political activism. I don't call it political activism. I call it American activism. You're caring for America. You're interested in preserving what we have for the next generations. You're not into politics and arguing about things and just having a meltdown division. You're interested in constructively improving this country, trying to, as a Boy Scout would say, leave it better than you found it. That's all we're talking about, right, Pete?
Yes. It's about stewardship. And even if you don't necessarily have a concept of the next generation, who they will be like, what they'll be doing, you can do it for the here and now as well. You can make a difference that will be felt and appreciated almost right away. I mean, that's what folks do through these local taxpayer groups and putting laws on the ballot for the whole electorate to vote on that limit the growth rate of taxes or say that, no, you're going to have to sharpen your pencils and do a better job at budgeting. Those things can pay off right away for the current generation, not just future generations.
And if you need help, if you need guidance, if you need support, if you need a partner, if you will, you know, I always hear these radio commercials where they say, you've got a friend in the diamond business. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've got a friend in the tax accountability business. You've got a friend in the tax reduction business called National Taxpayers Union. We've been interviewing them for 25 years, ladies and gentlemen, really close to. And I'm telling you right now that they provide some of the most cogent, organized, nonpartisan solutions that you can find anywhere. Their research is stellar. Their documentation is fantastic. Their partnerships and their reach out are just amazing. And all the way from the local level, all the way up to Congress, they've got partnerships and programs and solutions and support and research and et cetera, blueprints, if you will, what have been done in other places, all the way through to help you, ladies and gentlemen. So learn about NTU.org today. Pete, we've only got seconds, but have I left out anything important?
Except that I'd like to congratulate you for your 25th anniversary. It's been a fantastic ride, and I'm hoping for 25 years more.
Amen to that. And it's people like you that make the roundtable happen. It isn't about, it's not called the Sam Bushman Show. It's Liberty Roundtable because our goal is to bring groups to the table to where everybody can keep in touch with what's happening in one incredible location. We're grateful for your partnership and your friendship, sir. Godspeed. We'll chat soon.
Take care.
There he goes, Pete Sepp, always doing a phenomenal job on your radio, ladies and gentlemen. President of National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. I'm Sam Bushman, 2 hours in the can. Great talk radio. Thank you so much for being alongside for the ride. Solutions at your fingertips is one of our claims to fame. This is Solutions Radio. LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net, the websites. Donate liberally today. Free and on-demand radio at your fingertips. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic.